Appreciate it. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. We're going to start on time today because we have a lot to cover. My name is Dimitri Lylan. I work for Microsoft as a product manager, and I'm with the Visual Studio team. And again, thank you so much for being here today. I will say this, that I wish I could take questions in real time, but I do have a lot to get through. But I'm not going anywhere after the session, and I'm going to be at the booth all week. So questions, I hope you can hold them to the end, and we'll cover anything you have to ask me right after the session's done. Hopefully there'll be some time, or I'll stand outside out there as long as you want me to. You can come find me at the Visual Studio booth for the rest of this week. I'm pretty much going to park myself there. So let's go ahead and jump into our presentation. So today we're going to talk about Visual Studio Online. I always say this in, you know, in my sessions, I hope you're at the right session. So let me tell you what the session is going to be about. And if it's not the right session, don't feel bad. Walk right out. Go to some of the other great content that's here today. So, well, before we get to me, let's actually cover what we're going to talk about. We're going to do what is Visual Studio Online. And we're going to go through this application lifecycle. We're going to start with creating a team project. We're going to use Git source control to get some code into the cloud. We'll look at work items, build, continuous integration with Azure. We'll look at the web-based test case management. And we'll end with application insights just a little bit there. Again, if it's not the right session for you, please go ahead and do what you have to do. So back to me. I've been with Microsoft for about 5 or 6 years now. I'm losing count. I've been doing software development for a very, very long time. And I've been using Visual Studio Online since before it was Visual Studio Online, when we called it TF Service, for better or worse. It's a great product, and I hope you'll learn something today. So what is Visual Studio Online? It started off originally in the very first version that we allowed developers to start playing with as a, hey, let's take Team Foundation Server, the product that you can buy and host on premises, let's put it up into the cloud. And I think it's evolving to be more than that, because as Visual Studio Online, as a product evolves, we're adding things that are specific to the online environment. So there's a few things in there that you can't get on premises today. I'm not going to talk about the future. The future, we'll see how things go. But today, application insights is, for example, one feature of analytics in a cloud that you can do right from Visual Studio Online. And the Azure connectivity for like continuous deployment is a great feature, again, only on Visual Studio Online. So there are some exclusive capabilities, but if you are familiar with TFS on premises, this is TFS in a cloud. It's hosted by Microsoft. We have partners that also host it, but this is our implementation. We worry about keeping it up to date. We install patches and new features into Visual Studio Online regularly. I mean, every couple of weeks, every sprint, we have new features land in there, and those features eventually wind up going to the Box product, the on-premises product, through updates, right? We just released update to RTM today for Visual Studio, but back at build, we did the TFS update to RTM. So as of build, all the features that were on VS up to that point got shipped out to on-premises customers. We really believe in bringing the vast, vast, vast majority of features to on-premises, because that is our commitment to you, right? The hybrid cloud, use it TFS on-premises if that's what you want, or join us in the cloud, and the product is GA, so we hope you try it. So today we're going to go for the life cycle. There's not a lot of slides. I've got a couple of more, and then I'm going to be on this laptop over here going through demos with you. So just to set the baseline, what if you're not even sure, what this thing is, or can you afford to use it? What kind of features are in there? Let's talk about what it is. TFS in a cloud, right? That's what it is. And it's free to get started. There's a basic plan that we have in there, and it's free up to 5 users to be in a single team project working together. Though I find that a lot of people are MSDN subscribers. And if you're an MSDN subscriber, you're good to go. I mean, we basically give you VSO as part of your MSDN subscription. And just like Azure benefits that you can activate and take advantage for free, I hope you try VSO. VSO is great because you don't have to worry about, requesting a new team project from somebody. You don't have to worry about setting up the server if you don't have TFS, or you want TFS for something new and you don't want to reuse your current server. It's really, really easy to get started. I'll show you what that's all about. We have no limit on how many team projects. You can have as many people in there that are paying subscribers or MSDN subscribers, and you can have as many team projects as you want. There's no cost for team projects. It has cool features. You can do builds in a cloud. You can do continuous integration from your build system into Azure in the cloud, and we have application insights. And the rest of the functionality is the same as the on-premises TFS. This is where you get started. It's really simple. You go to visualstudio.com, and there's a big banner on there that says Visual Studio Online. You click on it and asks for you to log in using your Microsoft account. Your Microsoft account is your identity, what we used to call Live ID, and you're good to go I'll show you what that looks like in a second. And in a more specific agenda, just to break it down exactly what I'm going to try to cover, we're going to start off by setting up the team projects. We're going to get some code created using Visual Studio. We're going to check that code in. I'm going to use Git source control, not because I'm saying Git source control is the way you should work. I just think it's a cool demo, and I'm usually, like, if you see my demos in the past, it's older source control, the original TFVC source control that I keep using. So I figured I'll do something different today. We are committed to investing both into Git and TFVC source control equally. So as we roll out new features, you'll see them basically land on both sides of the fence. We don't see a difference in that sense. We just think Git is another great option some people really want. We're going to go for the backlog. We're going to look at the team rooms, how people can collaborate. We'll look at the new charting feature, how teams can communicate important information to each other. We'll take a look at the hosted build scenario, where I'm going to do builds in a cloud and then continuously integrate that into an Azure website. And we'll take a look at monitoring your applications once they're up in the cloud. The one thing I will say about Microsoft, the one thing I think we do really well is bring stuff together end-to-end, right? Visual Studio, Application Insights, Azure, Visual Studio Online. If you have your Microsoft account, you're good to go. If you're an MSDN subscriber, you're really good to go to get started. So I hope you do try it afterwards. All right, so lots of demos. I think that slide is very accurate. All right, hopefully everybody can see. The one thing you should yell at me for is if you can't see something. Otherwise, questions, please. Hold them towards the end. I have two really bright lights at me, so yelling is preferred over raising your hand. I probably won't see it very well. All right, so this is what it looks like when you log into Visual Studio Online. Right here, I have currently, and I'll do some zooming to make it easier for people to see. So I'm on a certain URL. I'm not going to demo creating the account. It's like one step, you know, create a new account, type in the URL. If the URL isn't taken, like Microsoft Conf demo wasn't taken, it's yours. And then you get to this page. So I don't want to waste your time showing you that one click. Once you do create it, you're going to be logged in. And you won't have this, right, because you won't have any team rooms yet. You're not going to have any projects. You'll have to click this new button to get started. That's where we're going to start our demo from today. But this is the page that you land on to see sort of your world, right? What are the teams that you have access to? Each team can have its own security. What are the team rooms where you can interact with people? What are your recently accessed team rooms? You've got analytics up here, right? If you're hooked up to our preview of Visual Studio Online, you can get to it as well. You can see recent news because, again, we publish updates and features all the time. It's all here for you. And we give you in this right-hand side some information on how many minutes you have left from your subscription benefit. In this case, MSDN for me, and virtual load. I'm not going to do load testing today, but basically, it's the load testing that you get with Visual Studio Ultimate. So if you have Visual Studio Ultimate and you have Visual Studio Online in combination, you can record a test, and you can use our servers in the cloud, and that's how many minutes of user time it gives you. So you can imagine you can do some fairly large load tests without setting up your own controllers and such. The only thing you have to be aware of is if your stuff's behind the firewall, that's going to be a challenge, right? Your test controllers can live anywhere. Ours live in the cloud. If ours can't hit your site, you can't test it. In the future, I hope that improves, but that is what it is today. But these are benefits you get as an MSDN subscriber. Like, you'll see this when you log in, so you know exactly what you have, and why not give it a shot and try it? A lot of people don't even realize that's here. That's why we added the resource usage in the right. So I'm going to pretend I have no team yet. I'm going to go ahead and create a new team project. This gives me a very simple dialogue. It asks me, give me a name for your team project, which process template. I am going to use Scrum. You don't have to use Scrum. There's other options in there. It says, what kind of source control would you like to use? This is what people are used to, the regular team foundation server control. It's very easy for me to go in here and say, you know what, I want to switch this to Git. For process templates, I have Agile. I have CMMI. I'm just going to keep it. TechEd North America 2014 will be my name. For real this time, I called it practice before, and I hope the internet does not go down, as it did in one demo a long, long time ago. That was not fun. I was actually at a conference. My whole demo depended on the internet. And to the building, the internet failed. This was in New York City. I didn't even have slides. It was the most embarrassing thing. I actually have a screenshot of every step I'm going to show you. That's how paranoid I became, for better or worse. But today, we should have better luck. So there you go. That's how quickly it takes. In my little anecdote moment, it created the team project for us. We can click the To Navigate button. And now we've gone from sort of your account view to your team view. So now we're in the team project itself. Let's look around what's in here. First of all, there's a pinnable area that we've created. So one thing we found, feedback from customers, a lot of this comes from folks like you who give the suggestions. People wanted to see what's happening in their team kind of easier. So we've created a bunch of pinnable areas, a bunch of information that's right here in the homepage. This is new, so there's nothing in here yet. We will pin some stuff a little bit later to it. We also have the ability to quickly get into any feature that you need. So this is the homepage. If you want to get the source control, if you want to get to work items, the build, or the test, it's all right here. The one exception to the rule is analytics. You have to go back to the account view. You have to click on the logo, and then there's an application insights button there. Just pointing that out, I've had people lose it and be like, how do I get back to application insights? It's a preview feature, so it's kind of outside of your project at the moment. So just be aware of that. All right, the first thing I want to do is I want to make sure that the right people are in my team. Team projects by default have an owner. That's me right there. It's my picture. I'm very happy, it looks like it. And then there's a manage button. If I go to the manage button, I have the ability to add both users and groups. So you can configure groups of users. Maybe there's a bunch of new team projects you're spinning up and it's always the same people, or you like to manage people as groups. That's the way in the real world most people would do that. So you can do groups. For me, I'm just gonna add another user just to have more than me in this project. It helps with the demo. I'm gonna add another guy named Brian. You might have heard of him. Well, there's many Brians in this case. Mr. Keller is my guinea pig. There's a picture of him. So now there's two people in my team project. My homepage is updated and I can see that. All right, next. I will say, no rhyme or reason to why I'm going to move to, let's say, source control next as opposed to work items. It's just a demo, right? But let's work with source control next just to imagine that I'm so excited to get my source code in, and that's the first thing I'm going to do. In the real world, I'd probably think about my work items, my backlog, but right now I'm excitable. So I'm going to switch over to Visual Studio. And I'm already connected to this account, and you know, that's, again, another step I just want to save time to show you guys, to not show you guys. But I'm going to go ahead and connect to the right team project that I just created. Before, I was only connected to my practice one, which is the only one that existed at the time. So now I'm going to connect Visual Studio. So I'm in my Team Explorer, not to go a little bit too fast. I'm in Team Explorer, and I decided to connect to a team project. So I'm going to use the Connect button and then select the team project here. It's going to go through. It's going to say what are the team projects that are available. I'm going to switch to the real one from practice, hit connect. And now I am connected. I'm going to double click, and that's going to bring me to the home page of the project. The one thing that it's telling me right away is that my source control is not cloned down to my machine. That means I have no workspace to work in. I'm going to fix that. I'm going to actually click this helpful link, and I'm going to say, all right, so where do you want to put it? It knows that I like my team projects source control in my repos folder. That's fine. I'm going to hit clone. And through the magic of source control and Git, my repository has been cloned down. I'm going to say, OK, thank you very much. All right, so now I'm going to create a new project in Visual Studio this time. And I'll stick to something simple. I'm going to say file, new project. I'm going to go to the web, C# web. And I'm going to select one of these new one ASP.NET templates. Now, I'm going to, I already have it checked off. I'm going to say add to source control right away when I create it. So I'm going to hit OK. And I'm going to choose an MVC website. And one new option that we added an update to is this ability right here to right away put this site, if I want, and if I have an MSDN subscription available, into Azure as a placeholder. And then I can start deploying for testing purposes. Or if I'm crazy, you know, and I like to go straight from code into production, I can even use it for my real site if I wanted to. I am going to do this because I do want to show eventually how all of this connects. So right from Visual Studio, I've already said I want to add it to source control. I want the site to exist in a cloud for my test environment in this case. And it, through my Microsoft account, it knows exactly which subscription I mean to deploy it in. So I'm going to hit OK. It's going to authenticate me. I'm going to type my extremely long mandated Microsoft Work password, probably get it wrong the first time. All right, there you go. I actually got it right. That's the first one. Next, I get this new dialog that you might have never seen before. So again, in Visual Studio Update 2, we've added this capability that now that I'm connected with my Microsoft account, it's going to generate some kind of random name. I could change it. It's going to ask me where I want to deploy, which subscription. I have multiple MSDN subscriptions, so it gives me a list. I can even connect it to a database. I'm not going to connect it to a database. Let's actually put it in North Central, since we're in the Central time zone. There's my website address, potentially, so I'll just save that to Notepad. Hit OK. And there you go. I'm creating my project locally and in the cloud at the same time, which is really cool. It saves me a bunch of time if I want to do that. If I hadn't checked it, it would never show you any of those extra dialogues. Now it says, all right, great. You want to add this to source control. Of course, I put the source into the wrong folder, so let me back it up just a little. It's just going to make my demo a lot easier if I do it right the first time. So then my problem was I didn't switch this to my Git repo. I'll do that now. So there's my Git repo. If I put it into the Git repo out of the box, which I'm going to do right here, that means it's going to know which source control I'm talking about. So I'm going to say I don't care about my current project, hosted in the cloud, MVC, everything looks good. As far as demo errors go, this is a less than painful one. All right, let's go. All right, it's being created. Just give it 1 second here. Now, in the bottom left, it's actually showing me that it's configuring my site in Azure. It's not going to deploy anything yet. So you do have to do one publish yourself to get everything started, but the site is going to be ready for you. So there's no like Azure or stand-up time that you're going to have to worry about. Next, you're going to see the standard Git or TFVC. It doesn't matter. The little plus icons means my files are ready to be checked in. They're not checked in yet, so I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to say commit, same as check-in in the other terminology. It's going to show me which files I want to check in. It's going to ask me for a comment. So first check-in at TechEd is my comment, and I'm going to commit it. The difference about Git is that Git has a local repository, not just a cloud repository. So first, I commit it into my local repository. Don't have to worry if you don't understand this. It's just the way Git works. But now I'm going to do the standard, like up to the VSL service commit by saying synchronize. And say, yes, I want to synchronize. And there you go. It's uploading all my files and pretty much done. We have a fast network. It's finishing the publish. And that's it. I'm in the cloud. So let's also do this. I'm going to publish my site into Azure. So I'm going to go ahead and start the publish process. Because I did that first step where I did the checkbox and I told where to deploy, it knows already where to deploy. There's no extra steps. It downloaded the publishing profile. It configured it for me. If people have done this before, it used to be more painful. Now it's quite easy. So I'm going to hit next. That's good with me. Yes, the release environment. I'm just doing a demo. I'm going to hit publish. And now it's actually going to do a local build of the site. And if everything passes, it's going to upload it to the cloud. I just want to kick that off so that step is done. It's probably even faster than I thought it would be. Let's see if the site actually loads. Oh, there you go. That's basically it. I went from not having a website in the cloud to having a website in the cloud. Every time I do publish now, the changes will go up there. It really is that simple. So let's save this URL in case we need it later and close the browser. All right, I'm published out. Good to go. Now, I want to show you how in the cloud you can also review your source control, because that's a really cool feature of VSO. So I'm going to go ahead and switch to Visual Studio Online. And this is the account that we created. So I'm going to click on the code tab in the top left. And right away, I will show you that I have my source control checked in and committed. The reason it's here is because I did that sync step with Git. If you were using TFVC, that check-in would have done it for you. Now it's up in the cloud. Life is good. I can see that I have a comment. I can see the user. I can see when it was done. I can look at icons, and it will show me what the icon looks like right in the web view. I can go ahead and take a look at a class file, and it will do the color coding of the class file in the web. I can go ahead and take a look at the published script that was saved for the Azure website for me in PowerShell, and even PowerShell will have colorization for you, line numbers. It's a really nice experience to be able to go in, take a look at source code in the cloud, take a look at even a compare. You can do compare between different check-ins in the cloud. It's very powerful tool. Like if, let's say, you don't have Visual Studio in front of you and you're like wondering what was the last check-in, what was checked in, what files changed, what changed between the two files. Heck, you can say download. There's a download button. You can add comments. I could, like, this demo alone could be 10 minutes, so I just can't do it for you. But there's a lot of features here. The one cool thing I will show you is you can hit the download zip file, and you can pull down the whole repository or a part of it or a tree or a folder or a file down to your machine. How many times have you just wanted to do that? Like, I just need a copy of a certain branch of a certain build or something. This makes it really easy. I'm not actually going to do it, but there's my 15 megabyte file if I wanted to pull it down. I will show the fact that you can go ahead and you can pin this web application to your homepage. Oops. So right-click on it and say pin to homepage. This will put it onto my team homepage, right? That pinnable area that I talked about before. So let's go back home. And there you go. So now my team, anybody that logs into this team project, will see there's been some activity in this project. You can imagine that your team maybe is working on like 20 projects, but three of them are really active. You pin those three to homepage. Anybody that logs in can see recent changes. You get in on Monday and you're like, recent changes from the weekend, that's weird. You know, you can catch things that you wouldn't catch before just from having stuff pinned right here. All right. Next, I want to go ahead and I want to start doing builds in the cloud. So I checked in some code, and now I want to make sure that the code builds correctly. And we have a list on our website of what is supported in a cloud-hosted build. You can still use your local build controllers if you want to configure it to do builds locally. That's perfectly fine, but I'm going to do build in the cloud. I love this because I've worked in plenty of companies that didn't do builds anywhere whatsoever. They never had a build server set up. We give you one out of the box. The only downside is that you can't do whatever the heck you want with it. You can't just install any sort of software on there. So when you're doing your build, we have a list of software that we support out of the box, and everything else has to be a part of your application. If that's a restriction that, you know, if that thing you need isn't on the list, you can certainly talk to us to see if we want to include it for all the customers. But do understand, we take great care to make sure that the build is always very clean. Every time you do a cloud build, we stand up a new VM, a fresh VM. And that VM has nothing else from any other customer, God forbid, right? Nothing else from you from a previous build. It's clean, it's ready to go. And then we do your build, and then we package up your build, so you can always pull a zip file down of the bits that were created, and then we destroy that VM. It's dead, so there's never a chance somebody else can get into that VM and get to your bits or something. We take that very seriously. So I'm gonna go back to Visual Studio, and I'm gonna create a build real quick. The way you do create a build in VS is you go to Team Explorer tab, you click home. There's these nice big buttons up here. You click on the build button, and it says, hey, there's no definitions, right? Right now, my build tab is currently empty. There's nothing here, so I'm going to click the new button, hit new. It's going to open up a window where it gives me a name. So I'm going to say TechEd Web App Build App 8. You know, you can get very descriptive. You can put it in the description. I'm going to click to process template. I'm going to say expand out, and I'm going to select 12. What's happening here? The reason why it wants to know how to do the build is because we have different templates for doing builds. Number 12 over there, the git template 12, is for TFS 2012. It's the one you want to use. If you know me, you know I'm not like the expert on builds and git. And we do have experts here at the event, but I'm not that person. I just know that this always works for me. And you know what? As a developer who builds apps and stuff in his spare time, that's plenty of information. I know this is the right way. Next, it already automatically it will filter the builds down to my solution that I'm working on. It knows, because that solution is open, that that's probably the one I want to do set up the build definition against. So there's really not a lot of work. I gave it a name. I selected a template. I double-checked these settings because I'm paranoid. Most of us developers are paranoid, right? That's why we most of the time have successful projects. When you hit the save button, it's saved. That means we now have a new build definition in our list. There it is. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to start that build. But because this is against the cloud controller, it's actually quite interesting because I can go back to my web page. I always click on the wrong one. I can click on the build tab. And here it is. Here's the same build definition. I can now start triggering builds from the cloud. Once I create the build, you can trigger the build from the web. You can use your iPad or your Android phone. Anything you can get to this website, you can trigger a build, or you can look at source control. This portal is very powerful, and it's just a web browser. And it works with any modern web browser, just FYI. So I'm going to actually trigger the build from the web. I'm going to right-click on it and say queue build. It's going to ask me, you want to use the hosted build controller? Yes. The priority is normal. You can make high or low, you know, the usual settings that it has in there. I'm going to click OK, and that's it. It's now in the list of queued builds. When we come back later, we'll see the build, we can see how to pull it down, et cetera, but that's good enough for us. So while our code is building, let's make believe that, you know, now my manager came by and said, great, you have build set up, you have source control set up, you're a passionate developer, where the heck are your work items? You know, so we probably are going to get in the meeting room, we're going to start to figure out what we're actually going to do with this empty project. And we probably have some priorities that are coming down from top management, probably have some priorities that we as a team want to do, and there's different ways that work can be structured to make that kind of easy to understand the different levels of the organization and also to make sure the right work is assigned to the right people. So we're going to go ahead and create a bunch of work. I'm going to click on the Work tab next, and I'm going to start creating work. So I chose the Agile, the Scrum template in the beginning, right? So this is the Scrum view. And right when I click on Work, so I clicked on this tab, by default, I go into the Backlog tab. By default, it's going to be in Backlog Items, and by default, it's going to give me the ability to start entering product backlog items into my empty queue. I can also change this dropdown right here to say bugs. There's two options in there out of the box. What's really nice is that you can always add a new item. You can click like this new button here, and it's going to give you a big pop-up form. I'll show that in a minute. And you can choose any work item you want. But most of the time, when you're talking about a backlog, it's either backlog items or bugs. That's how the template is set up. That's how a lot of people do their work. So I'm going to go ahead and say, well, I want to start entering backlog items. But let's take a step back for a second. Maybe I don't know what backlog items to enter yet, because backlog items implies that I know what work I'm going to do. But maybe I want my manager to actually tell me, what are our organizational goals first? What are sort of the high level? What features would you guys like out of the system? So I'm going to tell my manager to first go into the Features tab, which is right here. Let me zoom in and show you. So there's Features, right? This is where I was by default, but I actually want to go in here. So I'm going to click on Features, or the manager will click on Features, and I'm going to ask them to go ahead and populate some high-level priorities. What is a feature versus a backlog item? So let's say the feature is something like this. Improve communication with our customers during releases. Right? That's a feature. That's like a thing that they want to get done. All right, now that I know that's a thing that my management wants to get done, I can start to break it down and say, well, how would I do that? All right, so how about publish proper release notes? That would be a nice way to communicate. Create email newsletter. You know, these are things that maybe I want my team to code. And I'm going to do just a bunch of other things here just to give us a bunch of items in the list. So very, very quickly and easily, I can go ahead and do that. And maybe my management is thinking about also feature Y and feature, if I can spell, Dimitri's spelling feature. So they've added a bunch more features. So now my management created some high-level work, and now the team's created some work. Wouldn't it be nice to align those two, though? So yes, that's actually very possible. I can go back to my backlog, and I can click on this mapping button right here in the top right. Let me zoom in to make sure everyone sees. So there's a couple of buttons here which you can enable the views to change. So I'm going to say mapping on. So I'm going to turn on the mapping. And now I can drag from the left to the right here in the UI. You can also open up any item and modify the link to IDs. I mean, there's other ways to do this. This is the easiest when you're just creating work quickly. So I'm going to drag it into improved communication. Like, this one is improved communication. This one's improved communication. ABC will be Y. DFC will be X. I chose the best names. It's telling you in the bottom right that these things succeeded. If I click on this little piece of space right here, it will actually generate a view for me. So I clicked on this, now that I have the mapping done, and it shows you from here to here, which is this. I see which features are associated with which backlog items. If I had tasks, I can drill down all the way down to the task level as well. I'm going to go ahead and create some tasks. In fact, that's a great idea. But before I create tasks, I'm going to associate everything here, the whole product backlog, things that my team should start working on, into the current sprint. So the next 3 weeks of their life, let's make believe they're 3-week sprints, I'm going to drag and drop these items into sprint one. So there you go. My sprint now, if I click on sprint view, it's actually going to show me that I have 4 items that the management expects us to get done. And there's a little add task button here. I can click on that. And now I can say some task A. We'll create a few of these. Some task B. It's funny, you know, whenever I do this presentation, I actually, in the past, have tried to make these all meaningful, and I've realized why. Why am I hurting my brain? It's actually quite hard to come up with fake work, believe it or not. But ABC is actually quite easy. So I just wanted to give us a kind of realistic view of the world. So this is probably more or less a realistic view of the world. But let's say you already started some work before, and you found some bugs, and you want to enter bugs as well. That's not a problem. I'm going to go back to my backlog. I'm going to click on bug, and I'm going to say some bug A. I'm going to say some bug B. These are probably critical. These bugs were discovered just now. I'm going to associate them with the sprint as well. So now we have some bugs in our sprint. All right, we have a bunch of data. And now if I click on this features button again, and I once again choose how far I want to drill down this time. Let me zoom in to show you. So I'm in features, and I can drill down to two backlog or two tasks. I'm going to say two tasks, and now my visualization is complete. I can see product, all the way from features to product backlog down to tasks. You can do all of this with your on-premises TFS. What I find customers don't realize is the web portal is available for them on-premises. If you install TFS, you most likely installed it the default way. This is just the web portal that exists on premises. And if you have up to update 2, you have the vast majority of the features in the cloud. So if, let's say, the cloud isn't an option, but you love what you see here, this is available to you. Just check it out. It's actually quite easy to get to this portal. I did this at a customer. I promise you I'm not making this up. So they told me that they don't have the web interface installed. They said, we have TFS on premises. Our IT managers would have never installed this web interface. It goes against, I mean, they gave me a list of reasons. So I went into TFS in Visual Studio. I went into Team Explorer tab within Visual Studio, and there's a web portal button here. And on premises, it would actually open up the web portal on premises. So I clicked on this link, and, well, ignore that. That's a IE thing. But basically, it opened up their portal for them. And the guy was stunned. He was like, we have this? We have this cool, you know, tool internally? And yeah, you do. They installed it. They didn't even realize they installed it. So I think that was pretty cool. Maybe their security guys don't think it was pretty cool, but I thought it was pretty cool. All right, what's next for us? So we've done the mapping. I have, like, my list of things to demo to you. It's just too much to remember on my Surface device. So we created the task, the drill down, boards. A lot of times, work is much easier to deal with if you can do it visually. So if you're working with features, there's a board button. I'm going to zoom in to make sure everybody sees. So I'm in features. I'm in backlog right now. But there's a board button. This board button is in three places, and it does something slightly differently depending on your context. My context is features. I can get a Kanban board when I click on it for the features. I can customize the columns on this Kanban board. You're like, wait, what's a Kanban board? I had this question not too long ago in my life, so don't blame yourself if you don't know. I'm not here to teach you Kanban, but some folks like or learn about it and therefore like the ability to use Kanban to manage work, and it has a bunch of states in it. Most people can understand that. So from new to in progress to done. So I can actually visually, if I have a touch computer, my team, we do Kanban for our team when we have events coming up. So we have a giant perceptive Pixel, we work at Microsoft, we get those, they're like 5K. We get one of those displays. It works with any touch display. So we do this with our touch, with our fingers. We drop stuff, we talk about it on a big monitor. This works really well. When I was working with a customer a long time ago, I did this from my laptop, projected out to the screen. I would be just moving stuff around. It's nice, it's engaging. You can have a bunch of people standing there moving stuff over. It's a great way to do work. Certainly it works with mouse and keyboard very well. If I'm at the backlog level, I would also have a Kanban board, but Kanban board for my backlog and my bugs, I can do something very similar. They have a state. Again, you know, Kanban's a bunch of stuff to learn, so you can look at some videos online. We have plenty. Or if I go to my sprint, my board becomes my backlog board. This is what most people use. This is literally to say, where's your work at? You can say, hey, my work for this backlog item, for this task, is actually in progress. You can go ahead and drag it to in progress. You can drag it and done. And it's updating the database behind the scenes. As soon as you do that, it's updated. There's no save button. It's all done for you. Some people like to view capacity not from a backlog to task perspective, but from a person to task perspective. So in the top right here, we have a filter that you can switch. So I'm going to switch it to the people view. And now my work is all unassigned. Very, very nice, Dimitri. You forgot to assign it to people. If it was assigned to people, you would see different people, you know, vertically, and you can switch things out. No such thing as a perfect demo. We're close enough. All right, what's next? Calibration, cool. All right, so you're a team of people. You've got some work assigned. You've got some source code. You've got some builds going. By the way, how's our build? Did that ever finish? Let's take a look. So let's go to builds. If there was an error, you would see the error. You would see the error log. You can download the error log. It's super cool. It gets you out of Visual Studio because what happens often, you trigger a build, maybe even from VS because that's where you're committing the work, and then you walk away, and then you're at some other machine or in some meeting. Somebody says, how's the build? Just log into the web portal and see how the build's doing. Again, you can do this in your organization for your on-premises TFS. Go find your web portal if you've never seen it before. In my case, my build has successfully completed. That's because it's, you know, it's a fake build. In the real world, my build probably would have failed and I would have had to fix something. That's okay. It's good enough for demos. All right. So now that we've done that, I want to start collaborating as a team. So to help me do that, I'm going to take a look at my team rooms. So back on the home page, just not to be a ninja too fast, I click on the home button. Now that I'm back on the home page, I can see that there's one team room available. The team rooms are listed on the home page, and one team room is created by default for every team you set up. So when in the very beginning I hit new, and I created a new team, it gave me a team room. And team rooms are a great way to do collaboration, especially when you're not physically all in one physical team room. So there I am. I'm in my team room. What is a team room? It's a chat room. It's a chat room with a log that does not go away. So be careful what you put in your team room. It's a durable log. The whole idea here is this is for your professional environment. And you might have three people in a room working together, but you might have two more people somewhere else around the world. We have people building TFS and Visual Studio. They're in Bangalore. They're in Redmond. Some in San Francisco. We have folks out in North Carolina. We have folks out in Europe. We have folks out in Russia. We have folks everywhere, right? And therefore, team rooms often help stay virtually connected together. You can come in here and say, hey, at Brian. I finished that check-in. Just have to change, actually hit tab there. There you go. I finished that work. Hit enter. On Brian's screen, that will actually be lit up because it knows it came to him. If he logs in, that text won't be as bland as it is on my team. This will get his attention. So people can really quickly see work, but this team room isn't really useful yet. Here's where I think it becomes super useful. I'm going to go into Manage Events. There's a link in the right-hand corner. And I'm going to select that I want to see whenever a build is completed from the build that I defined for the app. Oops, too fast. Manage Events again. I'm going to say that I want to see code changes whenever somebody makes a code change in here for the project. Whenever work items get completed, all of this is off by default. That's enough. So now my team room, which we're going to leave alone for a little bit, is going to monitor all changes. So let's go and do a few things with this environment. So I'm going to open up a second tab. I'm going to go into the work tab, and I'm going to say that this bug right here is actually assigned to Dimitri. And it's actually done. Yeah, it was that fast. I was fixing bugs like as you guys were watching this demo. And then I'm going to assign this to Brian. And Brian's very slow, so new, I think, is good enough for him. All right, so now we changed a bunch of states. We did a few things here. I'm going to go to builds, and I'm going to trigger another build because actually I think maybe something needs to be validated again. So I'm going to trigger yet another build to start going. All right, we've got build going. And I'm going to go into Visual Studio. I'm going to take a look at my app. How about we go to the index and change something. I'm going to add the word TechEd. Sorry for the mic noise. I'm going to do a commit. This is all to demonstrate team room, so I'm moving really fast. Just making a bunch of changes, right? In code, in the build, in the work items. Done, done, done. Sync, commit, up to the cloud you go. Life is good, as long as the internet stays up. So let's go back to our team room. Team room starts to trigger. First thing that's in here is already the fact that there a build, you know, I'm sorry, one commit has been changed, right? And if I configured it right, there should be more information. Let's just refresh. If it's if it's giving me problems, you know, what the heck is this? Why did it give me a problem? That's right. This is what your team room could look like. Think about a good demo is to have a backup. There's my backup team room. A bunch of activity. So team rooms serve a great purpose out of the box if you configure it, at least as kind of a news feed, or if your team feels like engaging, it's a great place to engage. Either way is good. I love it just for this feature. Like if I was working with people, this would be the most useful thing for me. The communication, we have a lot of ways to communicate. We have Yammer, we have email, we have SharePoint, text messaging, you know, on and on and on. If something is very useful, you can still communicate here. But for me, this is my personal, Dimitri's favorite feature is the activity feed. The cool thing is all of these blue things are links. So if you want to take a look at the commit that was done, if I click on the commit button, it opens up a new tab. It shows me who committed something, what was committed. It's links. If a work item changed, you can go straight to the work item. If a build started, you can go right to the build. It's very powerful. Another way people can collaborate, let's go back to our project. Another way people can collaborate is to create pinnable charts to the homepage. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. The way you create charts is you go to your work tab, and then you go to your backlog. Backlog on both sides. So I have backlog on the left, backlog on the right. Cool, everything seems to be working. And now I'm looking, all right, I have a few items here, I have a few bugs. What's a good thing to show? How about let's do queries, and let's create a new query. Open bugs. So this is, you know, if you've used Visual Studio and TFS enough, you've probably created queries. I'm not going to sit here and explain queries to you. They're a way to filter data down, right? So in this case, my work item type, I want it to be a bug. And I wanted not to equal, just for a very kind of simplistic demo, just not to be equal to done, right? That's good enough. So I'm going to hit save. I'm going to hit run. It's going to show me there's at least one item that meets that criteria. And then I can click on this charts button. So this is where it might get new for your experience. So you're in the work view. You're in the queries view. You created a query in the editor. You've validated the query runs. And now you can click on the charts button to start creating charts based on that query. Charts are based on the query that you have in the system. Certain query types don't support charts today. We certainly welcome your feedback, and we are working to make it even better. But this kind of basic query will work. It's more complicated queries today that can generate those, just, you know, being transparent. So I click on charts. I have no charts for this query. I'm going to hit new, and I'm going to say I want to see by assigned to state. I want to see all the open bugs. There's my chart. And I'm going to click on this dot, dot, dot. I'm going to say I want to pin it to the home page. I go to the home page, and now I see it. And if I want to, I can actually move this and drag it to the right because I have permissions to change the screen. This isn't super compelling, but imagine the real charts you could have. Imagine the real build activity. So you can pin builds to here. Let's do that as well. Let's go back to our builds tab. And I'm going to right-click on the build. I'm going to say pin that to home page. And now I also have builds. So now there's a bunch of stuff pinned here. This can be very productive. You can see which build succeeded or failed. You can see how much work is coming into your system. You can see different charts. Like think about a chart like unfinished work for the sprint or something. Something very, very useful for the team to keep an eye on. This is all very, very cool. All right. Remember that website we deployed? Let's open it up again. This very basic website, there you go, it's hosted in Azure. If you're an MSDN subscriber, and there's even free plan versions, but I mean, like, one thing that we keep telling our customers, because we want you to use what we already sold you, or your company's already paid for, you have Azure credits. You have a lot of Azure credits. Everybody that has an MSDN subscription assigned to their name has Azure benefits. You can create a ton of websites, a ton of virtual machines. You can do dev tests in the cloud. Today, we announced the ability to run Windows 8.1 as a test client in the cloud. I mean, that's awesome. People have been asking for it for a long time. You can use it as your developer workstation. A real thing I did yesterday, I had a demo. I had a pre-conference. A few people I recognize in the audience, you were there. So I had to show Xamarin Tools for Visual Studio. Doesn't matter the details. My machine has a lot of pre-release software. Let's put it this way. I help test stuff for our product teams. And I basically broke Xamarin a couple of days before because I'm smart. I'm that smart. I install pre-releases before I do a pre-conference. And I just needed to show Xamarin tools. So I went to Azure. I spinned up a new virtual machine with Visual Studio pre-installed on it using my MSDN benefits. It took a few minutes. I logged in. I booted it up. I gave it my Microsoft account. So it associated my Ultimate subscription that I have through MSDN to that Visual Studio instance. I installed Xamarin tools in like 20 minutes while my other colleague was talking. And then I showed a Xamarin tool demo on the virtual machine. You can do stuff like that, or you can even do it for real. I have one VM, which is like my clean VM. That's where I do my Azure development for my personal work that I do for my personal projects. I never install pre-release software on it. It's like a clean VM. It's awesome. Go check it out. But back to this site. It's on Azure. That also means that if I go to my portal, this is the Azure portal, and I click on this new website that I just created, I will have the ability to actually go ahead and set up continuous integration, which means that every time somebody checks in, into Git or TFVC source control, it doesn't matter, anybody that checks in code into my team project that's associated with a website URL like this, it will deploy the code to that website. This is very cool because then you can go ahead and show people how, you know, how something got changed. Like your test team can always have the newest version of the site your team is checking in. Would I do this for production? Only if I was really crazy. Would you do it in dev and test? Absolutely. The way you set it up is quite simple. You say set up deployment from source control. You click Visual Studio Online. You can do it from other places. I mean, this is really cool. You can have a Dropbox account with source control on it and source on it. That's not really source control, but you can have some source somewhere, or you can have it on GitHub or wherever, or VSO in this case, and you can deploy stuff every time something gets added. I'm going to go ahead and choose Visual Studio Online, and I would only have to do this, Microsoft Conf demo. I would do this, and I would do that. It would use OAuth. It would ask me for my credentials again in Visual Studio Online. I would say I allow Azure to deploy source code that was checked in and built using this account. The link would happen, and continuous integration would be ready to go. Some of this takes some time, so I can't demo this well enough in the thing. So you have to believe me that hitting authorize will work for you. In my case, I've already authorized an account, this website right here. Let's open it up. So this site changes flow out to it every time I do a build. And let's open up this particular project. Let's make a change, and we'll come back to it in a minute, and the change should be there. I like to, you know, put proof behind the words that I say in this stage. So we'll go into the home index view, and I'm going to say, yep, this really did work. And this is just another, you know, Git team project, nothing special. Take a demo. I'm going to hit a commit. I'm going to hit sync. Sync. Great. Now, let's go to Visual Studio Online. And I'm going to switch. This is a really nice way to switch if you have multiple team projects that you work with. So I'm going to hit the switch, and I'm going to say practice one. That's where I set it up originally. There's my team projects. And I'm going to go to build, and I'm going to go to queued. Let me show you what this looks like. This CD right here means that this is a continuous integration build that was automatically configured. Of course, it doesn't mean you can't create something called that, but if you did what I described previously, this is what would be set up. And because I made a check-in, this is automatically built. You can configure any build to be, you know, to rebuild itself upon check-in of code in a certain repo. That's fine. The cool thing here is that not only does it do that, but also deploys it out to Azure, right? So that link, I think, is very valuable for many scenarios. So we'll come back to this site, and we'll take a look to make sure things got deployed just a little bit later. So let's switch back to the real project here. All right. Another thing that you might want to do as a team is do some testing in your software. And you might want to use the test capability that we've built into the product to help you. There's many facets of tests. Let's kind of break tests down a little bit. you can do different kind of tests using the products that Microsoft creates. Microsoft Test Manager will let you do all sorts of automated tests. You can record a test, you can play a test back. There's all sorts of automatic testing built into the Visual Studio family. In this case, I'm going to show you some very basic things that you can do with the web alone. So let's say you never use Test Manager, or that's too much for what you're trying to accomplish, but you do want to do some testing. Maybe you just want to have tests that people run manually, or maybe you just want to run through some web tests. That's where this kind of shines. If you do more advanced scenarios, this is still very useful because it gives you the ability to get insight into what's going on with tests, no matter what kind of clients people are using, Visual Studio, Microsoft Test Manager, the web. The web shows you everything. So as a developer that wants insight into what's going on with testing out there in the world, hey, maybe this is a great way just to do that. But if you don't do any testing, and not to confuse with unit testing, right? I'm not talking about unit testing at all here. I'm talking about testing, clicking on something, making sure it still works. So let's go to the test tab. So this is what we call the web-based test case management. And it gives you quite a bit of capability. When this first came out, it was much more limited. So if you haven't looked at this in a while, take a look at it again. A lot more capabilities are here now. So I'm going to go ahead and say, hey, I want to create a new test plan. Everything starts with a test plan. So communication features or something, right? Test plan. Before, this wasn't even possible. So I'm going to say create. And I'm going to right-click on that, and now I get a bunch more options. So I used this new button originally to create the highest level, and now within the plan, I want to create one or more suites. Suites are a collection of tests. Everybody hopefully should do this to some capacity, where you can define different kind of tests you want to run as a group. In this case, we're going to create one static suite, and it's static because I'm manually going to add tests to it. There's ways to create requirements-based suites and query-based suites where tests are automatically added into the suite. It's too much to show, like kind of in a generic demo. But know that there's more to this than what I'm showing you. It's just the basic one is the static suite. So I'm going to go ahead and hit right-click, new suite. And I'm going to say manual tests, right? Maybe because we have other tests we want to add in the future. So now I have my suite created. I can go ahead and create a new test. So I'm going to click the new button. I'm going to say new test case. And I want to, make sure TechEd is on the web page. I'm not saying this is a good name for a test. That's what I'm calling it. And now, in the bottom of this test, it's a very rich web UI that allows you to go ahead and add the steps for a test. Not only are you saying you're going to run this test, but you're going to define, or you could define here, what the steps are for that test. So I'm going to go ahead and say, really, really basic. You know, I'm going to break it down 100%. Open up a browser. Let's not be that specific. Navigate to page, in this case, home page. Make sure it says the right stuff. The reason why I'm not saying what stuff it should say, because that should go into the expected results. So let's say it should say TechEd Rocks 2014. And that's the end of my test. So I'm going to go ahead and save it. And now I have a test. Tests are pretty interesting. And I find so many people don't know about them that I like to spend just a little bit of time to describe it. You can create a test. You can give it a name and steps. But you can also give it a configuration state. You can create one test, but then you run that test across different configuration states. In my case, it's a web-based test against a web page. So I would create a test that goes against maybe Internet Explorer and Chrome, different kind of products that I want to make sure work just as well with that set of tests. Every browser should do the same thing. So you can configure them and set them up, can get really advanced. In this case, I just have one test that I want to run. So I'm actually going to go ahead and run this manual test. And I'm going to say run test from the web, which is the first option. And I'm going to get on the right-hand side the pane here. Let's zoom into it. That actually allows me to go through each step and mark whether the step succeeded or failed. I can even attach images or notes or any other file to the test. I could create a bug from it. There's a bunch of stuff that you can do right from the web. Here's some places where I've seen this be very successful. We have one customer that was using this to test their iPhone application. The reason why this worked well, because they would open up on the Mac, on Safari, I guess, this web page. They would click on run the test manually. They would get the little pop-up. They have the emulator to the right. And they would, you know, run through the steps that are on the left. They would mark which ones failed. I mean, this allowed them to get something done that, you know, without some software, it wasn't possible before. And of course, websites were great because that's something you can do. It doesn't actually monitor what you're doing, but in my case, I'm actually going to go to my web page and look. Did I open the browser? Did my machine work? That's a very healthy step. Yes, my machine works. Did I navigate to the homepage? Yes, I did. The page loaded, right? Did it say, nope, actually it doesn't say that. That's a bug. So no, it doesn't. Missing expected text. And that's the reason why it failed. So this will be saved in the test. So when you look at previous test runs, you'll see that this failed. I'm going to say create new bug. Because I actually don't want to just know that the test failed. I want to give Brian, who forgot to do this, it's all Brian's fault, I want to give him this bug. So I'm going to click on the drop-down, select Brian as the person. I'm going to say, hey, Brian, the text is missing. I don't have to give him a lot more information, though. Here's why. Embedded within the test is the comment, the test that was run, everything. Which step failed? If there was attached files or images, he would get that as well. You don't have to go crazy at this point as a tester. Or as a developer doing test, you're good to go. I'm going to save this. And now we have a new bug in the system. I'm going to hit the save and close button. This will close that particular window that got open. Let's go back. Let's go look at our work. And the text is missing is right here. That got added. If I go back to my home page, there is now two bugs. One is assigned to Blank. I love Blank. He's my favorite person. That means I don't have to do the work. But then Brian, he's my other favorite person. That's still not me. So now we have two bugs in the system. So we've gone through the whole life cycle. We've seen how everything's impacted. I'm going to cross my fingers and say, did I configure the team room right to show this as well? Let's go take a look. There's my team room for real. Might have messed up the configuration. Yeah, I must have done that. If you don't set up your managed events right, the events are not going to show, right? You've got to configure something right for it to actually work correctly. Go figure. All right. Now, let's look at one more thing in our real project. Let's make sure that our build, oh, no, it's not in the real project. It's in the practice one, sorry. So let's go back to our practice project, go to builds. So as a completed integration build, 3 minutes ago, we did a build that pushed out to the site. Let's go back. This is the site that I set up previously. It should be open. If not, I have a backup link. There you go. So this is from the continuous integration. I have to kind of show this, you know, one after the other. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So there you go. We have our text, and everything's been deployed. This stuff works as expected. It really allows you to set up a clean end-to-end scenario. All right, a few more things I wanted to point out. These are features that we really hope make your lives easier. Let's open up to the right window here. Let's go back to home, switch to our real project. In work, there's a few things that I didn't show before. And as I look at my timer, I see that I can, so I definitely want to do that. One thing that we've added recently is this ability to tag work items. And you can tag anything. You can tag a feature. You can tag a bug, a test suite. What it allows you to do is filter down what's in your system by an arbitrary tag as opposed to creating a query. This is something that was always a pet peeve of mine. Anytime I, as a developer, wanted to filter out items based across the LAN, right? I want to see everything assigned to me, but I want to see it across the bugs and the work items. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of work in the system, and it's hard to do. You have to go create a query assigned to me, filter it out by certain criteria. It was a pain. Now we have the ability to tag items. If you click the Add Title Tag button here, I can say that this is my tag 1, tag 2. These tags are being created in the system. I hit save. And now if I close down this mapping panel just to give us a little more real estate visually, now my items are tagged. I can go ahead and pick also some work items that are actually, this one will be tag 1. It gives me like text completion. So as I type like T, you know, it gives me all the T's. So tag this one will be tag 2. So now we've tagged a bunch of items really quickly. And we can filter down the items by actually going to this little filter in the top right and say, OK, filter by all. No, that's not what I want to do. On the right-hand side, I want to filter by tag 1. Filtering by tag 1 gives me a view of items, and it's all filtered down based on anything tagged with that item. Again, in a sense of collaboration, this makes it much easier to get through all the work that's pending in a system. I love to show tags. It's a very cool feature. So we've gone through all these tabs. Next thing I want to show you is something that we have in preview. So in our preview release stage of the product, and this is worth pointing out because everything up to before this point that I showed you is go live. You know, this is stuff that is ready to go. It's in production as far as we're concerned. There's an SLA. Everything's up on the website, all the details and all the pricing and all the benefits, MSDN subscribers, as I described. This one feature, Application Insights, is currently in preview. That means we're still working on it. There's still a lot of work to get done, but we feel comfortable enough that we've opened up the floodgates. If you haven't looked at App Insights recently, but you looked at it originally, you might have seen, hey, this was behind some kind of key you had to get from Microsoft. Now you don't have to do that anymore. So App Insights enabled for everybody. And App Insights is our analytics system. I'm going to switch back and show you like two slides here and then straight back to demos. So Insights is the last category that we want to look at. Oops. This might be, oh boy, this is an older version of my deck. It's all right. We'll talk to it. There was one slide that's missing here. So Insights gives you three main capabilities. You can go ahead and take websites running on the internet. And just like you can with Google Analytics, you can insert some JavaScript code to start tracking user data. You can see who's visiting your site, where they're coming from. You can see what browsers they're using, what operating systems. All this insight is being gathered. You can do application monitoring. Application Insight lets you pick a URL and make sure that it's up, but make sure that it's up from like dozens of locations around the world. I have Application Insights running against a web API that I have on the internet. Every couple of hours, it goes to this web API from like Moscow and from Europe and from America and multiple locations. And once in a while, I actually get like Japan can't reach my API or, you know, it's too slow. It hits some kind of threshold and I get an email alert from it. So you can do monitoring. You can also install it on servers. So you can install it in Azure or on-premises, an agent, which will be running against IIS locally on your server, your Windows server, and it will send telemetry up into the cloud so you can actually monitor what is the server healthy, are the web pages loading, is there exception data, is there performance data. It's very, very configurable. The way we see it, it's part of the overall lifecycle, and it's part of Visual Studio Online, it's part of the cloud because that gives you right now the biggest breadth. You can attach it to a cloud, you can attach it to on-premises. Right now, it's not an on-premises product, Application Insight itself. You can't take the management side of it on-premises, but you can install that agent on-premises. There's no way for me to do justice. That's like an hour presentation, right? So we have some great talks from Build and other conferences. There might be something here. I just don't remember off the top of my head, which does full end-to-end Application Insight demos for the various scenarios we support. I do want to show you how easy it is to get started. So I'm going to open up my project here, the new one that I created. I'm going to go back to the source control, and I'm going to right-click on it. And there's a new option here. Thank you so much. Somebody wins a karma point for today. You have to switch, see? Like I said, sooner or later, I forget that only I can see the world. All right, so let me restart that again. Thank you. If I have my Solution Explorer open, if I right-click on my website, I now have a new option in the menu, in this very, very long menu. It's called Add Application Insight Telemetry. But this isn't here out of the box. To get to this point, you have to install an extension. It's a free preview extension in our gallery. Type in Application Insight Extension in Google. It's like the second link down the line. Once you have the extension installed, using your Live ID, it can wire your web application over into your account. It used to be like a dozen of manual steps. Now, in like a few steps, you're ready to go. So we're going to do that for real. We're going to right-click. We're going to say Add Application Insight Telemetry. And it's going to recognize the fact that I have a certain login and a certain account associated with it. I can do all sorts of configuration, but I'm just going to hit the big blue button that says Add Application Insight Telemetry. It will add the right NuGet package to my web application. It will add the configuration data, and it will add a cool little shortcut link collection, which I'll show, that lets you get to the web portal to view the analytics data for this project with a single click. There's no more like, oh man, to get to my analytics, I have to remember my team URL and click a bunch of links. So what changed? Let me scroll down just a little bit so we can see it all. Since I have source control, I can very easily see what actually changed when I did this. It changed some references. It added a NuGet package, right? That's a given. Next, it added a brand new file because application insights.config. This has all the data. I'm not going to open it because then you'd see GUIDs and other stuff that's associated to my account. But trust me, they're there. It also configured the NuGet package in here. It configured the fact that application insert is running against this web project. It did everything you have to. The next time you publish this project, it's going to start collecting very basic analytics data. It's going to start seeing where people are coming from. It's going to start seeing what browsers are using. All the stuff I mentioned, that's configured for you automatically. If you want monitoring, you've got to go to the web portal. If you want to instrument your server, you've got to go to the web portal, download the agent. But just for your web project, commit, check in. If you have continuous integration, it just gets deployed out. If you click on, let's say, web application dashboard here, it opens up the web browser to the right page to this dashboard, which shows you exactly what's going on. Now, in my case, nothing is going on. I actually don't have any data in this project because it's brand new. Let me just show you what this looks like a little bit. I'm going to actually load up my personal project. I'll show you my blog. I've been running Application Insights there for a very long time. So let's navigate to my dashboard. And I'm going to switch applications, my blog, okay, under usage data, and yeah, the blog is selected, okay. So this is going to be real data coming from my blog. You're going to see how unpopular I am in the world. There it is. You can see that my SQLite post was very popular, my virtual machine post. Brian Keller, he still gives me more hits than I did to my own webpage. So all this stuff is available to me. I can take a look at top pages in the application. In this case, my application is a website, but it's still an application. That's how it's looked at. I can go ahead and click on environment, and I can see that people are coming to my blog just a little bit from Windows 8, but quite a bit from Windows 8.1. That's probably me hitting a refresh, so don't look at that stat. I'm so sorry for these people right here. Please get off XP. It's done. Let's move on. I don't blame these people at all. They have awesome machines probably, and they're smarter than me, and that's cool. Lots of stuff over here. I can go back to users, and I can actually see that on 5.12, I had 5.11, I had like 9 people hit my blog. Visit my blog, please. I need to see this number go up. I'm going to be depressed soon. But you can see all that. You can also instrument your Windows Store applications. You can instrument your Windows Phone applications in the same way. You can instrument even things like using the JavaScript, the generic library, anything that supports JavaScript. So you can take your PHP or Python, Flask website, whatever, right? You can instrument that just as easily. They are working in more and more SDKs, so you'll see more and more very easy SDKs to apply to your system. All right, and that's it. We've pretty much gone through the whole life cycle. Let's switch back to the PowerPoint and say that we have literally just taken a whirlwind tour. I have literally 7 minutes to spare, which is more than I thought I would have. So if there's any questions, feel free to come over and ask them. If not, then I really hope you learned something, and thank you so much for coming. We hope you try Visual Studio Online. Thank you.